Okay, I think that went on to the wires here. I'm going to kick it off as I've got 1:04 on my clock, which I think is a reasonable time to start. So welcome, everybody, to Food Secure Canada's Sharing My Stories series. We are thrilled to have Eric Domi and Lucy Papasi with us today, both co-founders of Feeding My Family. They're going to be sharing the story of Feeding My Family and how they've done what they've managed to do in such a short amount of time up in Nunavut, and share with us some of their plans for the future.
Sue Hamilton.
So just a little bit of administrative details before we get going. First of all, I would ask again that everybody please mute your line. You can either use the mute button on your own phone or press *6. This will mute your line and also unmute your line. So at the end of the presentation, if you'd like to ask a question, you'll want to unmute your line. And this will just help us keep things quiet while Eric and Lucy are presenting. You can also, if you like, hear who else is on the line by pressing *2. That'll give you a roll. Sorry, not *2. Don't press *2. *8. That will give you the list of people who are on the phone. I know, Lisa, you'd asked about that. And just to let everybody know that we are recording the presentation today up until 2 o'clock. We'll turn it off at 2 o'clock. And this is really just to allow others who aren't able to be with us today to listen in on the presentation. If you are shy or if you would not like to be heard, you have two options, either to follow up with Lucy and Eric afterwards or with myself with your questions afterwards. Or you're also welcome to email me. I'll be keeping an eye on my emails at programs@foodsecurecanada.org. We're just experimenting with something a little bit new today. You might have seen this at the bottom of the email that we sent out. Sorry, not at the bottom. We have a hashtag. For those of you who are tweeters, you're welcome to jump on to the hashtag is SOS North, and the SOSN are all capitalized. And we just, that's for, by the way, for sharing our stories, North. And so if you have questions that you'd like to send in, please do. And you can do it that way, or you know, feel free to have sort of that parallel conversation that I understand happens frequently with the wonderful world of twittering, tweeting. There you go. So without further ado, I'd like to turn our attention over to our guests today. Eric Domi was planning to attend our assembly. Our FSC had a national assembly in Edmonton this year, November 1st to 4th. And we had invited Eric to come and present about Feeding My Family on one of our plenaries. And unfortunately, try as we both might, poor Eric ended up spending about a week in transition with a number of travel delays and unfortunately some bad health, which meant that he got to visit the inside of a hospital in Ottawa rather than attending our assembly. So he's feeling much better now, thank goodness, and we're thrilled that he's home and safe and sound and that we're still able to hear what he has to share with us. So Eric lives in Peninsula. I asked and I still can't get it right. Pagnitsung, Nunavut, where he's lived most of his life with his wife and four grown children. He's currently raising his eldest grandchild. He runs a small business in the community where he lives, in business communications and consulting, which he's been doing for the last 25 years. He's presently a spokesperson for Feeding My Family. And the co-creator of the Facebook page for Feeding My Family that currently has, as I think you all know, 20,000 members across Nunavut and is now growing internationally. Lisi Papasi lives in Iqaluit, as a mother of five children, And she, sorry, I'm just looking through. I'll let her tell her own story of her family's life. She is also one of the co-creators of Feeding My Family, and she believes strongly in people working together and using the resources that we all have available in making our work together. And she's also a practitioner of traditional values and practices on the land. And I'll let her fill in the many blanks that I've left in describing Lisi's background. Regardless, a huge welcome to both of you. It sounds like we've got probably between 20 and 30 people on the line, and I hand it over to you now to share your story with us. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Amanda, for the introduction. As Amanda said, my name is Eric Jomi, and I'm from Pangnirtung, Nunavut, and in Pangnirtung we call in Inuktitut it's actually pronounced Pannuktuk in our own language in Inuktitut. And just for the intro on Lisi, I'd just like everybody to know, and I'm pretty proud to say that Lisi Papatsi started this Feeding My Family on Facebook and has been awarded the Northerner of the Year on our own Up Here magazine up in the north. If you do get a chance to get online and look up Up Here magazine, you'll be able to read that story. And it's very exciting. And also, she's also been interviewed by the Facebook Stories, which is the on Facebook as well. So it's really interesting to get into that. But without further ado, I'll just start with our presentation. We started Feeding My Family back in March of this year, and you know, we've had a very interesting you know, the timeline has really put us to date where we have a lot of interest, as we said, across Nunavut and also internationally, with members being on Facebook. And also, as being the spokesperson for, I am also the spokesperson for feedingmyfamily.org. So if you get on feedingmyfamily.org, you're able to get a better idea as to what this is all about. But Feeding My Family was started to raise awareness about the high cost of food in the north. And just to start on the quotation, it's about people coming together and doing something where you are raised up to believe. And my parents taught me that we have to work together and to make sure everyone gets enough to eat. On to slide two. We have, as I said, probably over 20,000 members. Next slide, slide three. The realities of Nunavut, and as Lucy Webb says, wish I knew how to use iPod or iPad, would have taken pictures of three kids eating at the dump. Went there to check something instead of saw three kids eating at the dump and told them not to eat at the dump where you're going to get sick. And one kid said, okay, we'll be able to blame Northern, which is the store in most of the communities, as to how much the food costs, which are fairly high, which their mother wasn't able to afford. So they had gone out to the dump to look for something to eat. Anyways, Lucy had taken the kids back to her home and fed them. And these are the kind of stories that we often hear you know, from people that are on Facebook, and you'll be able to see a lot of them are true stories. And going on to number four, Nunavut is a very vast area with very few people, and 2 million square kilometers, the same size as Western Europe. And we have 25 communities, only accessible by air and sea only. So we don't have any road system or rail system at all. So everything has to be flowing in. If they're not flowing in, they're shipped. Most of the products that we buy from the stores are shipped up north only once a year in the summertime. Everybody should know that the ice freezes up in the winter. And the population of Nunavut is approximately 31,906 at the last census. And presently, my community that I live in is 1,506 people in Pennantuk. And tab 5, income versus cost of food. In 2009, a median total income for Nunavut was $26,830 a year. And the current average cost to feed a family of four in Nunavut is $437 per week, or $22,725 a year. And this is very difficult, especially for people that are on welfare, that you know, that have to depend on the government to for that. You know, to feed their family for a whole month. In a lot of cases, they have to depend on their outside families to provide extra food when they do run out of their own at the home. And going on to slide 6, you know, definition of poverty, statistics Canada defines low-income household as one which spends a much higher proportion of its income on necessities of life, food, shelter, and clothing, than the average equivalent household in Canada. And a low-income household is defined as one which spends more than 55% on necessities, which makes it very difficult for families to own their own home, their car, or snowmobiles, which are used a lot in the communities. You know, with current high food prices, many Northerners have to spend more than 100% of their incomes in order to feed their families properly. And Statistics Canada does not collect or compile data directly measuring poverty in Nunavut because of the fact that there's less than 100,000 people, and whereas Statistics Canada uses 100,000 in the southern stats, which doesn't really include our stats in Nunavut, or in not only in Nunavut. When I'm talking about the north, which also includes Nunavik, which just recently became part of our group, because of the fact that we are pretty much in the same boat, so to speak. Tab 7. We can't just eat like our ancestors did. I mean, we're pretty proud Inuit. We continue to practice our Inuit traditional practices on hunting or subsistence. It's an important part of our life, but because of poverty, it prevents us to live off the land entirely because of the high cost of equipment. Snowmobiles are up to at a start 10,000 or more. Gas per trip is about 400. Komatik, which is made of wood, cost about $1,000. You know, if you can afford a GPS, which is about $200, or a satellite phone, which is a must up here in the harsh environment. If you do, your snowmobile breaks down, you need to be able to communicate, and that costs about $1,000. And with your gun, which is essential, with bullets, which is also about $1,000. And on top of that, you need to be able to survive out there with, you know, a tent, stove, and your grub for the trip. So it's very difficult for a lot of families to be able to continue to practice and continue to hunt to provide for their family. But it is really wonderful that we have other family members that are able to hunt on a regular basis and provide for their own and also the community. And even if you're able to harvest wildlife, you know, we share it amongst family members, and traditional foods harvested from the land, you know, supplement store-bought foods in the north. Tab 8, you know, shows us that the extreme environment, we have extreme cold conditions, which limits sunlight, especially in the winter time, where high cost of electricity is very costly for family members. And the high cost of construction and maintenance costs are very expensive. And many of the usual fixes for food insecurity, like agriculture and greenhouses, are not possible because of the lack of sunlight and also the cold. Even the summertime, there's hardly any way that anything can grow. Even if it does on the land, we do have edible berries, and they're only there for a very short period of time. And presently on type 11, government food subsidy programs. We do presently have and have just started recently with the country food distribution program that was started in 2012 by the Nunavut government, which are able to help Nunavut Mute to meet the basic needs of increasing by access to country foods, where a lot of the communities may have a specific species of food, like example in Pannuktuk or even in the Khalwit. In some of the Baffin communities, we don't have a lot of caribou, which we did a few years ago, and they've migrated to another area because of their own need for food. And in that case, we're in some, we've had to order caribou meat from other communities in order to provide that specific food for our families. But this is what's wonderful about this is that it's open to community hunters and trappers organizations, which are responsible for, you know, providing programs, hunting programs in the community. And presently the government is trying to provide community freezers in order to provide those country food and be accessible to the communities, and where the hunters are able to go out and procure whatever animals that are available out there. And also understand, too, that not all hunts are successful. Some may go out, some hunters go out for the day or even longer to hunt a specific animal. They may go out there but never ensure that they'll come back with, you know, with the food that they were out to hunt for. So that also makes it a bit difficult for the families. In terms of the government subsidy programs, the famous, infamous Nutrition North Canada, which was started in 2011 by Government of Canada through the Aboriginal Affairs in Northern Canada Development, which was formerly the food mail program, which was replaced by the food mail program, which made it the food mail program was specifically used by people that were employed that had bank accounts, credit cards, which also restricted people that were on in low income or either on social assistance. But they tried to fix this, but we know that the Nutrition North program hasn't really helped Northerners at all because of the fact that we found that the stores and the airlines were the ones that that were benefiting because of the fact that they're with because of the distances and also the high cost of being able to fly in all those nutritional products coming into the community. And both Northern, the co-ops, and the airlines were taking advantages of this, and the result, food prices, you know, particularly jumped way high. To the point that not a lot of the nutritional foods were being bought. As an example, if you go to our files on Feeding My Family, there's a files and photos available on top of the page. You'll be able to have a look at some of the outrageous prices that that have been photos that have been taken. And I'm pretty sure some of you have read in the newspapers, even in Europe, there was one about $28 head of cabbage, I believe it was. And, you know, these are just some of the things that that I know that that we've had problems with Nutrition North program, which was supposed to help Northerners. In a lot of cases, some of the nutritional products were are too expensive, and then we have families that are, in order to feed their, to have something in their stomach or feed themselves, even at lunchtime, kids will be having a pop and chips because it's cheaper than a bottle of orange juice or something that would, you know, that they would be able to benefit. So these are the some of the problems that that we've encountered. Under tab 13, we've been asked a lot of questions about why not move. I mean, why won't the government move us? You know, that's like, this is home. This is where we've grown up and are accustomed to. And the cost of moving, well, is the government ready to, you know, move all of Nunavut to a southern place, you know, and provide them with the cost of moving and also providing them with a healthy environment? I don't think so, because we've think that we are much healthier in our own environment. And also, Arctic sovereignty has always been a question, too, where some of the high Arctic, if you're familiar with the high Arctic exiles, back in the 40s and 50s, they were moved up to the high Arctic in order to have be there as human posts to for Arctic sovereignty. Another issue that that a lot of people are having difficulty over time. And going on to tab 15, our group intentions was to raise awareness of high cost of food in the Nunavut. But again, we have expanded to include Nunavik, which is northern Quebec communities, and also northern Labrador. They have had their own page before, but there wasn't a lot of interest going on, so we've adopted them, and they are providing also information out there regarding their difficulties with the high cost of food in their communities. And to organize peaceful protests, this is something that is really interesting because of the fact that Inuit has always been resilient. We always, from time immemorial, it has always been our, we always listen to Halunat. If some of you don't know that, it's the white man came up north and came up with the Bible and taught us what it meant to be, to have religion and follow the churches and all the authority. Because of that, we've never really been able to, until recent years, have, and when we created Nunavut, you know, we learned that we have to be productive and provide, being productive meant also helping and creating a healthy Canada. And we've never posted before until March, and this was very, people saw this as being a movement of people that were saying enough is enough. You know, we have to at some point say something for ourselves. And a lot of the elders felt that this was against the law. They felt that, you know, we have to continue to follow the white man's way of controlling the people in the north. But the peaceful protests in the communities have really empowered the people to think otherwise. And this is the Facebook is a forum where Nunavut can come together and talk about their own struggles with high cost of food and the effects that hunger has on their lives. And also to unite Northerners' voices as one in order for the rest of the world, the rest of Canada and the world to see that we are continuing to have problems in the north. In order to, there's actual photographs, as I said before, on the top of the Feeding My Family page, of photographs of the high cost of, or the outrageous prices of nutritional foods in the stores. And there's also a comparison chart that I believe that I sent out to Amanda, which we can probably share at some point. I'm going to tab 17. You know, like I said, we've had a very good turnout in a lot of the communities to protest, and we've had people in Ottawa. And we're very thankful for those people that are, you know, continuing to support us with this plight. Lise Pierre, merci beaucoup.
All right. Thank you, Eric. I'm going to take over. My name is Lise Papazzi. I should ask Amanda again, how much time do we have left?
So, can you hear me? I think I'm off yes. Right now. Okay. So it's 1:34. This session goes until 2 o'clock, and I'd love to leave some time for questions and conversations. But please do finish your presentation.
All right. Thanks. All right. So slide 18, like Eric mentioned, protesting, it's against, not against, but it's something that Inuit never really believed in doing. It's sort of going against society, a government, against people. Inuit people have always been to live as one and to be as one. So protesting was, it's not something that Inuit do. At one point, we were even trying to find a word in Inuit for protest. And we sort of came up with a word that's similar as along the same line. Next slide. So Facebook group is a place where people can come and post and discuss. It's sharing stories of struggles, brainstorming community-based solutions, questioning the effectiveness of government policies and programs, and creating spin-off groups. Mainly, I think what has made it kind of hit and stayed on is that the common language, you know, just one word we all have an understanding is the word hunger, and I think that's what kept us going. So next slide. To unite Northern voices as one with one strong message. Again, the basic bottom line is to fight hunger and fight high cost of food. Inuit have long known hunger. There's some stories about, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago about hunger and how Inuit help each other to fight hunger or go help a camp and help them fight hunger. So, you know, we thought at that time, you know, if we just have one voice, not go off in different directions, is that we have one voice, we can stand better as one, and that's high cost of food. Next slide. So these are some of the concerns for the next three or four slides that I'll talk about, some of the stuff that we've heard. So slide number 22, one person posted buying healthy food about that. Even as a college student here in the college, surviving off the little money I make is hard when having to buy your own groceries. I bought $120 worth of groceries on Friday, and I'm already on need of to buy more. I don't have any children, nor do I have anyone else but my dog to feed. We have a neighbor that comes to our house every day trying to sell beat-up items and most times are broken. She has two young boys. It's hard for my parents to constantly buy groceries and not help out this young girl and her two children. Inuit, in this day of age, struggle to find food on the land. They should not struggle to buy food in the store. Too many families starve or only eat junk food because everything else isn't affordable. This is how our government of Canada is treating us in the North. We must all come together to protest our high food prices. We should not stand for this anymore. So stuff like this we heard a lot about. You know, enough is enough. Let's do this together. Let's move forward. Let's bring this out. So I think at that time, a lot of it was... This is a chance for us to go forward. Let's go forward with it. Next slide. This one we've often heard of, children going to bed hungry and not attending school. You know, lots of kids go to bed hungry, and they wake up hungry. You know, some parents will not get their kids to go to school if they don't have enough food in the house. There's a lot of parents that will keep their kids or send them to their parent or their relatives to go have something to eat. So we heard a lot of this, of kids going to bed hungry. This person didn't mention they're happy there's a breakfast program at the school, which helps a lot of children in Nunavut. Next slide. Next slide. We heard this a lot too, and so many different people having to choose between buying food and paying bills and the stress of having to provide for an extended family. This is a big one too, actually. You know, the choice between buying food and paying bills. What do? Put food on the table or keep the roof over your head or have some electricity? So there's a lot of people posting up going in depth further and further because they just can't meet the needs. And having extended family, you know, having maybe 8 people in the house and you're having 1 income. So there's a lot of feeding of other extended family. Next slide. Again, like I mentioned, this one person working to support an entire household and limited employment opportunities. This guy mentioned, I have 2 jobs while supporting myself, my wife, and 4 children, all under the age of 10. My first job, I make $15 an hour working twice a week, if lucky, 3 nights a week. My second job is delivering flowers for $10 for each delivery. And I deliver minimum of 1 to a max of 4 in a day. I make stuff like carving jewelry to go by as my pays are always small. 2 of my children are still Pampers and bottles. So there's a lot of posts. Another very common post that we've seen is people in the household, 1 working person to feed maybe 5, 6 people, other people. And then, you know, we've heard a lot of, there's just not enough jobs in some communities. Even if you're educated, you know, some people have hard time finding jobs. Even a job at the co-op or at the store, people still have hard time finding jobs in some communities. Next slide, slide number 26, high cost of freight and airfare, limited variety of food in the store, overcrowded household, high cost of doing business in the north, poor quality produce and meat, hard to plan ahead to buy cheaper food from the south when you're living day to day. So these are some of the things that we've heard quite a bit on the Facebook group, heart. You know, some people have posted, well, why don't you guys buy in bulk? You know, I mean, it's good if you have a good paying job, but what's really, I think, what people don't understand is, you know, people are literally living day to day or paycheck to paycheck. By the time they get their paycheck, they may not have any type of food in the house. So what do? You wait maybe a couple of days to a week to put food on the table, or do you immediately put food on the table to feed the kids? So that's like a vicious cycle where, it's, you know, people are just trying to meet their needs. Never mind down the road, you know, there's a lot of people that just have a hard time meeting day-to-day needs. So, mm-hmm. Next slide. This one is slide number... Sorry?
Sorry to interrupt you, Lucy. We've got about 15 minutes left together.
I'll quickly finish these slides.
Okay, super.
So, slide 27, another one, high cost of living. Like Eric mentioned a bit about other things, some of the satellite bills, power bills, cell phone, it's just really high cost of living in Nunavut, in the north. Next slide. Many foods being sold past their best before dates. We've heard a lot of that, a lot of expired food on the shelf. We've begun to learn the difference between expired and best before dates. but there has been a lot of expired food on the shelf. And I think, but this is one of the areas that I think has improved since we started. Slide number 28, what members say about Nutrition North program, it subsidizes retailers, not northerners, no way of knowing if the savings are being passed on. We have no choice but to shop in those stores because the reality is it's only those stores in the community. The airlines now treat food as general cargo, whereas it, when they were in the food mail program, they were treated much more effectively than they are nowadays. So next slide. Northerners are concerned about recent changes in program objectives of NSC website. It's not Nutrition North Canada is not working well for Northerners. It may be working well for the stores, but not for the actual people. Next slide, food banks. It's hard to operate. The forms are long. It's hard to find space, reliable space. And then having to find donations. One community wanted to set a food bank, and then, you know, they started the process, and they were worried about people breaking in to the food bank to get food. So one community opted out from that. Next slide, feeding the future, turning thoughts into action. So our current objectives on slide 33, we have seven of them, is, you know, encourage Northerners to empower themselves, unify people to share one voice. We've always strongly believed in that, is that, you know, if we give them one voice, one stand, one togetherness, this will go a lot further than anything. Encourage government policymakers and retailers to find better ways to lower the cost of food. Encourage new food suppliers to operate in the north. Encourage improvement in food quality through better inventory control. Encourage establishment of food banks and work with other government and non-government organizations to improve the overall quality of life for Northerners. Last slide. So Inuit have long lived to survive. It is in our blood to find food and help others when someone goes hungry. Inuit all over the North have understood the word hunger from the past to this day. It is handled through patience, through acceptance, and through innovations. Hunger was fought by our ancestors, and we can fight it again today using different techniques. Thank you. Question?
I can imagine a big round of applause now. Thank you, both of you, for sharing that. It's a fantastic presentation, and it really brought to life the struggles that you're all facing in the North. I'd like to open it up to questions and comments. We do have about 12 minutes left together now. So thank you for keeping them brief to allow a number of people to have their voice heard.
Can I just add something here, Amanda?
Sure.
Just recently, the government of Nunavut and the Nunavut Tungavik Incorporated, which is the organization responsible for the land claims agreement, have recently signed an MOU to start working towards and dealing with the high cost of food in the north, and also to tell you that if Feeding My Family hadn't been started, we're not sure as to exactly where we'd be today because of the fact that we have been driving both our organization and Nunavut government to take a step towards dealing with these issues. And, you know, we've been told that they've, in fact, there was also a policy made back in 2007 which was basically research done and basically collecting dust in one of the bureaucratic shelf. So these are just some of the issues that we've had to deal with to date. Thank you.
Thank you. That's very interesting. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. I'd be curious to hear more about that MOU during our meeting. It's coming
yes.
up at 2 o'clock. Okay, questions or comments? Just don't forget to unmute yourself. If we're not responding, it's because we can't hear you. So star 6 will unmute you.
Hi, this is Kathleen from Ottawa. First of all, I really want to thank both of you. That was extremely helpful, very, very interesting. And I've got, I guess my major question is to figure out what you feel, what kind of support people in the South can provide to the work you're doing. And maybe that's also a question for the meeting that's going to happen after this.
Yes, that's one of the questions that we'd like to present ourselves. But we've tried some ways of trying to get some food drive from the South. The problem has been the problem of trying to get it up north and distribute it to a vast area. In 25 communities, it's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of money, and we're still struggling to deal with that.
Anybody else have questions?
Francois from Toronto. I would like to know if we can learn from other countries, like in Europe, but they face the same solution, the same problem than in the north of Canada. If other countries have put in place some policy or program, but they are successful. And,
So you're asking if there's other countries that have put in place successful policies?
Program or policy, and we can learn from them. Or if it is the same problem, a very high price for food and vegetables, healthy food, and if somewhere in Europe they put some policy and program in place that can be interesting to look at.
Sorry, are you saying that you know of one that would be interesting?
No, I don't know.
You're asking
I'm
the question of whether they've looked into other places and other policies that exist?
Yeah, or policy or program.
Okay. Eric and Lucy?
I think that's an interesting question. We've been asked about that as well. And we've presently, and I think Lucy had written a letter to the chair of the Inuit Sokomperla Conference, which is consists of people, an organization that looks after the circumpolar world from different countries, Canada, Alaska, Greenland, Russia, and those countries that are having the same issues and problems, but we still haven't got a response yet. And another thing, too, that also may ties into this is the fact that other countries are very interested in the North today because of the vast resources that we have up North, and yet those countries are very eager to take something from us, but that haven't provided a lot of benefits for taking the resources out of the North.
Could have a whole other presentation on that very subject, I suspect. Thanks. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, if I may, Amanda, it's Ricardo Ramirez in Guelph.
Hi there.
Eric and Lucy, thank you very much for taking the time to do all of this. It's very inspiring. And the question I have for you is the following. I recently approached the Northern Store as a result of another project we were working on to see if I could find any opening within their administration to consider bringing in healthy food. And I did not make much headway, as you can imagine. And my question to you is, should we give up on the Northern Store and seek alternative competitors, as you mentioned on their website, or is there any hope at trying to achieve some pressure inside the organization and shame them to start producing some alternatives, because what is available right now is so unacceptable? Thank you.
Oh, I can try and answer part of that. If Eric, if you want to add more, you can. There's no doubt. There's no doubt that Northern Stores are gouging the Northern people. I mean, that even the, some of the Arctic cooperatives. But I still believe in someday lowering food price. They could do it. Yeah, I mean, some of the prices are 3-4 times higher than the regular food price down south. I'm hoping there's other stores that can work up north. We've always had the Northern for the last 300 or 400 years. But I think that it would be good to have a variety of stores, I think, number one. And number two, you know, hopefully the stores can sort of go, oh, okay, now they're speaking up. What can we do to lower the food price? I'm hoping something along that line will happen.
And also, for some of you to understand that Northern Stores or Northwest Companies has stores pretty much in the other Aboriginal states, not only in Canada, but in this, South America as well, as we understood it. And they do make a lot of money from smaller indigenous people. And also the fact that, we've always had been controlled by outside resources. And that's something that we need to try and curb in order for everybody to, have an understanding and also support us in trying to get reach that goal. Thank you.
Okay, let's take one last question. Don't be shy.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name's Lauren and I work at ITK in Ottawa. And I was just wondering, under one of your points, you said that airlines now treat food as general cargo and the quality control isn't as good. I was wondering if you could expand on that. Is that they're not checking the food? Is it put in a different part of the plane or is it left on the runway for longer or...
I could answer that a bit. It was in mail, food mail program, food when they were traveling from south to up here were treated as a priority. So they were on that first plane coming north. Right now, as it is, food is not considered a priority and with the airline cargo, airline as a cargo. So it's only like a general cargo listing now.
Last comments from
Susan Roberts,
Eric, or Lucy. Would you like to just take any last comments?
I'm pretty sure there's a lot of questions, and everyone is more than welcome to join in on our Facebook page, Feeding My Family. And there's also another section to that, which is called the Kitchen Table, And in there, you know, people are able to talk about possible scenarios or, you know, solving some of the problems. And, there, you know, there's been a wide range of suggestions and comments being made about some of the issues that we're trying to deal with today. And I'm pretty sure that you find it interesting. And I'm sure, again, as I said, feedingmyfamily.org, there's a question or frequent asked questions on that page as well. Thank you.
Any last words?
No, I'd like to thank thank you, Food Secure Canada, for letting us do this. As always, we bring awareness out and to let people know what we're doing up here. Maybe hopefully it can help other groups as well across Canada. So thank you for letting us present.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you present. I think we all feel like we understand your movement much better up there. It feels so far away sometimes. And we do hope that you'll come back maybe in the next year and let us know how things have evolved. I'd just like to give a quick plug for Food Secure Canada. This is a new series that we started about a year ago called Sharing My Stories as a way to do exactly that, share stories of the amazing work that's going on across Canada to build a better food system and to make sure that we all have enough good, healthy food to eat. First of all, I'd love to hear your story. If you have one that you'd like to share with people across Canada, get in touch, and we'd be happy to showcase your work. And we can't do this without you. Our Canada Food for Canada's member-based organization, and we depend very much on a membership fee to do the work that we do. So if you aren't already a member of Food for Canada, I would encourage you to take a look at our membership page on our website. Individual memberships start at $10, and there's also organizational memberships. So thank you, everybody, for your time. We are now going to take a five-minute sort of transition time into the meeting portion of this call. So for those of you who are sticking around, feel free to take a few minutes to go to the washroom to get a
clean
water. And we'll reconvene about 5 minutes. You can stay on the line if you'd like to. Thank you, everybody.
Bronwyn Fitzsimons.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Cargo Ramirez.